fair. This is State versus Fair. Good morning.
Good morning. Chief Judge, honorable members of this court.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. I'm Rob Portis from the Commission on Public Advocacy, and I represent John Fair, a person who has made a challenge under the DNA Testing Act to challenge the wrongfulness of his conviction. We have a finding by the District Court of Lancaster County denying relief both for exoneration as well as a new trial. Case revolves really on the interpretation of a single case, State versus Johnson, and how it was applied in this case. End of the day, I'm going to ask for two forms of it. One would be to send this case back to the district court for analysis of this case without consideration of the evidence Nebraska Supreme Court has said is inadmissible and should not be considered by anyone. The other alternative is for this court to find that there was clear error by the district court in its reliance on conclusive evidence. Now for some facts. Background. This is a shooting that occurred, and it was a trial.
Excuse me, before you go further, just so that I'm in line with you here.
Okay.
So are you asking us to exonerate him, or are you asking us to find that there's sufficient evidence to create a new trial?
All right. I have assigned both as error.
I know that.
I think the stronger argument, to be forthright with the court, is motion for a new trial. I think that's the clearest argument. I think there is an argument to be made, it is arguable, that exoneration should take place here. And to understand that, we have to understand what happened. There was an officer that had stopped a citizen in Lincoln, Nebraska, just south of First. The officer did not see the vehicle. He's approaching the vehicle, has about 30 seconds to deal with the numbers considerations. Is the vehicle in park? What's the person going to do with the radio traffic? The officer sees partially on the back, no direct front. That car then, car comes to a stop less than a mile or so away in North Lincoln, where the person exits the vehicle. Officer gets behind no closer than 20 yards, and as the person is fleeing from the officer, shots are fired. Officer testifies, 5 shots.
Didn't the officer get behind the vehicle? Wasn't he close to the vehicle when the guy got out and started leaving?
Your Honor, it's a fluid situation. There is movement. At some point, of course, the officer is going to take cover. He's being fired and distance himself from the shooter, as well as try to align himself in a path to where he can return fire. Certainly an intense situation, and there was plenty of testimony about the intensity of that, how nervous that officer was after long it took. But that is the basis of an identification, eyewitness identification. Deal with the DNA testing. Legislature tells you right at the outset, our concerns is wrongful convictions based upon mistaken with eyewitness identifications. And that's something you see mirrored in wrongful convictions across the country. DNA comes in. Deal with the fact that at trial, mistaken eyewitness identification. In this situation, that person ran. That makes identification large part upon the sweatshirt that the individual was wearing.
And the pants.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
And the pants.
And the pants.
And now the Adidas pants.
And there's the Adidas pants. And there's there's confusion as to whether the pants are wearing. There are civilians that have saw things that the officer that was firing in the firing situation. And then subsequently, at a different time, but the same night, Mr. Ferry is around walking in that trailer, sees officers run, and the officer testifies to what sweatshirt that person was wearing, which is Exhibit 28, which is a different sweatshirt than what Officer Erkovich said, which is 49. Now we get to that sweatshirt, and so sure tells the jury that's exactly the sweatshirt he's wearing and not Exhibit 28. Send that's the DNA test that we did. Send it to California to do the testing. Look at the points of usual wear, sleeves and hood. Sleeves, excluded. Excluded. They look at it, wrist, cuff, excluded. Hood, another point you expect the usual to wear a word. Excluded as a major portion. There is a minor portion that has a mix of 4 individuals. They can't make any finding on the minor portion because it just isn't enough. Okay? inconclusive. Send those results to Jason Leonard, the scientist at the Nebraska State Patrol. Yeah, Siri did it right in California. That's how we would have done it too. We would have excluded as well the sleeve and the major portion. We agree that you can't. There's no scientific relevance at all to that minor portion. Okay. We get fast forward now to the district court opinion, where the district court decides that because it's inconclusive as to the minor trace portions, all of the DNA evidence is inconclusive. And if you turn to pages 10 to 11 of the judge's opinion, he says so. He says, however, the evidence is that at least one other person has worn that sweatshirt. Four profiles found in the hooded area, and the fourth profile is not being detected on the sleeve. The missing profile could be Mr. Ferrer. At best, as in Pratt, the DNA evidence in this case is inconclusive, and therefore the DNA evidence does not meet the standard of exculpatory or exonerating evidence. So he did, the judge, took the fact that there was part of that hood that no scientific relevancy could be linked to, and said all of it's bad, and that you don't get really testing.
Doesn't he also talk in terms of the other evidence that was presented?
There was other evidence already presented, and the judge does address it. But he most certainly does say that he is relying on the inconclusive results to deny DNA testing.
As I understand it, both this sweatshirt, Exhibit 29, as long with Exhibit 28, were both in a bedroom in the back of the trailer where your client was found.
That's true, Your Honor. And the client testified that he was wearing Exhibit 28, which is a light blue sweatshirt. And other officers testified that the person that they chased into the trailer was wearing Exhibit 28. Officer Erkovich, the only one that's seen the shooting, very confident that the person he saw wasn't wearing the light blue sweatshirt. He was wearing the dark blue Exhibit 29.
Was there any evidence as to any other male person in the trailer at the time that...
Yes.
Was arrested?
There were two other males in
was
there.
Was there any testing done on those individuals?
I have no identification of those individuals. I have no clothing seized from those individuals to test. I have no description of the clothing that those two other males were wearing. There were also two other females in there. And there was also, I can't remember the status of the testimony about other males that had access to that trailer that night or in the future. But it did come down. The officer Erkovich saying Exhibit 29 was worn by the person that shot at him. And Exhibit 29 excludes Mr. Fair as a person that was wearing that jacket, sleeves, and the hood, both.
Well, it doesn't exclude him, because there was some,
yeah.
Right?
No, I think that's the wrong way of looking at it, Your Honor. He's excluded. That language was chosen by both scientists from the state and from California as a source of the sleeve material.
The
he
sleeve.
Was excluded as a major portion of the hood. The only thing that he was not excluded on is the minor contributors, the four people that could have contributed to the hood. And now we get to Johnson, where it says, when you have those inconclusive results that the scientists don't rely on, it shouldn't have any relevance to the prior.
What about the state's argument that it could potentially be admissible should, on a new trial, you introduce the DNA results showing he was not a major contributor?
Could the jacket itself be admissible? Yes. Could the DNA testing results of Siri, and even the state, if we had him go back and duplicate it, be admissible as exclusions? Yes. But would not be admissible to that jury any evidence about a minor contributor, and that would have made all the difference in the world in this case. And if you look at standards or what you do to decide whether or not to grant DNA testing, you ask, could it create a reasonable doubt, and would it create a different factual circumstance than the witness relied upon at trial?
And do you have to consider the fact that he admitted that he had been in that vehicle earlier working on it?
Your Honor, there is evidence beyond the DNA, but this isn't the sufficiency of the evidence test. The test is whether or not there are reasonable doubts in the outcome and whether or not facts are different than the eyewitness testified to it. Wow, we've met that threshold. We don't have to prove that there is no other evidence. Again, that would be something the state would like to use in a sufficiency of the evidence argument. But that's not the test. And that's not the standard. And that's not the burden. Yes, there was other evidence. There's some. The fact that the rounds are in his pocket, that he had been in that Cadillac before, that he's in that trailer park, and that he was outside. That is all evidence. But it still comes down to whether or not that officer is identifying, through his eyewitness testimony, an individual. He identifies that person wearing that sweatshirt.
So just for purposes of discussion, if instead of being mistaken as to the identification of your client, he was mistaken as to the identification of the sweatshirt, is that reasonable or unreasonable?
Your Honor, could you go back and say that it's possible that he was wrong on the sweatshirt? Certainly. But at this trial, in this person's trial, the officer was sure that he was wrong. And he linked that to his identification. Now, second trial, does the officer maybe say something different? Maybe. But my client's entitled to that. The DNA is powerful evidence. To the extent that an officer wants to say he's wearing that sweatshirt, that powerful and potent evidence.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. How far did we take him over? 44 seconds? Okay, all right, let's add that to the appellee's time, please. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. The state submits that the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying both Fair's motion to vacate his convictions and his motion for new trial because the DNA test results do not establish his innocence, and they also would not have produced a substantially different result if they had been admitted at his trial. I'll begin with the motion to vacate. In order for it to be appropriate for a district court to vacate a conviction under the DNA Testing Act, actual innocence must be conclusively established by the DNA testing. That is clearly not the case here. The DNA testing results do not prove that Fair was not the shooter. First of all, an absence of DNA on the sweatshirt itself does not automatically mean that Fair was not wearing that piece of clothing on the night in question. Furthermore, the DNA testing results from the hood of the sweatshirt produced a mixture of at least four people. And although he was excluded as a major contributor of that mixture, the results from the minor contributors were inconclusive. Thus, the district court was correct in finding that the DNA testing results did not exclude him as a minor contributor. There is nothing in the Supreme Court's holding in State v. Johnson that prohibits the district court from considering inconclusive DNA testing results when determining whether to vacate a conviction. Johnson was a direct appeal case, and it focused solely on what the prosecution can offer as evidence in its case in chief at trial. Thus, Fair's reliance on Johnson is misplaced. Furthermore, the state believes that it would be error on the part of a district court to ignore inconclusive portions of testing in determining whether the test results proved actual innocence under the DNA Testing Act. Fair is essentially asking this court to treat inconclusive testing results the same as results that conclusively exclude a defendant. Johnson itself, however, makes it clear that inconclusive results are neutral, and thus they cannot establish actual innocence, and the district court was correct in denying the motion to vacate. The evidence at trial also established that Fair was not wearing Exhibit 29, the black sweatshirt in question, but instead was wearing Exhibit 28, the dark blue hooded sweatshirt. Although Yurkovic did testify that he believed the suspect was wearing Exhibit 29, the description he gave to dispatch at the time of the shooting was that the suspect was wearing a blue sweatshirt. The other witnesses who had contact with Fair that night identified Exhibit 28, the blue sweatshirt, as the sweatshirt Fair wore that night. Yurkovic also testified that his identification of Fair was not based on the clothing, and that he was certain that Fair was the person who fired five shots. Thus, the district court did not err regarding the motion.
As I understand it, the officer observed the driver of the Cadillac when he first approached it after having stopped it for speeding. But he did not get around in a clear view of the front of his face. He only saw the back of his head and part of the side.
I believe he had a side profile view when he bent down to ask for his license and registration.
And he says that the person who he had contact with did not have any facial hair.
He did not remember any at that time, no.
And Mr. Fair has facial hair.
Correct.
He had it at the time.
He had a mustache at the time.
So that creates one problem.
That was something the jury was aware of at the time, yes.
And then when he has whoever was driving the Cadillac has the accident, and the officer gets out to see what's happening there, if the person's injured, sees this individual get out of the vehicle and run away.
Yes.
And he's no closer than 20 yards.
20 yards is as close. Yes.
And again, the person is running away, and he turns around to shoot, I take it?
Yes.
And you think that that's a reasonable distance to be able to make an identification?
The officer testified it was, and the jury obviously believed him. I think the other officers, the sequence of events that happened once the chase ensued, he was immediately spotted by another officer and then another officer who chased him into his trailer. While there may have been some differences on what, at the time of trial, the officer believed the sweatshirt was, the officers were always consistent in the pants that he was wearing, that there were blue pants with three white stripes. Those were the pants he was wearing when he was arrested.
Those would be, I believe, Adidas-style
yes.
pants.
Mm-hmm.
And those would not be an unusual thing to find in Lincoln, Nebraska, would they?
No, they would not. But Officer Smith chased the person wearing the blue Adidas pants into the trailer. That is the person who was arrested. That is the person Yurkovich testified shot at me. He also had ammunition in his pocket. That ammunition matched the ammunition that was found in the gun.
Can we consider all those other things when we're deciding whether or not the DNA tests raise an issue that creates evidence that should be considered by a jury to determine whether or not the defendant is...
In terms of the motion for new trial, yes, I think you do consider it. Whether the DNA testing, if it would have been admitted at his trial, would have made a difference. And the state submits, based on the evidence that I just described to you, it would not have made a difference. And
my understanding is the officer testified he was certain it was Exhibit 29.
That may be true.
Wouldn't the DNA results, at least with regard to that testimony, provide some reasonable doubt as to the credibility of the officer?
It may, but the jury had the dispatch tape where he is telling the dispatch officer that he is wearing a blue sweatshirt. So I think his credibility regarding what he believed at that time was already in front of the jury. The jury already had to decide, which one do we believe? And ultimately, did it even matter? It was a dark sweatshirt. I don't know that it really mattered. The pants were the distinguishing factors. And Officer Yurkovich testified that he identified Fair based on himself, the person, what he saw, not on the clothing. And he was certain in his identification. I think I've hit on all the points I wanted to regarding the motion for new trial. I think that the other evidence adduced at trial established his guilt, and the DNA testing results would not diminish that. He did admit to working on that Cadillac the same day. He had the ammunition in his pocket, which matched the revolver that was found at the scene that had five fired rounds.
Excuse me, wasn't the gun found somewhere between the vehicle and the trailer?
I believe it was found between two trailers in the trailer park.
A couple blocks away from the trailer that Mr. Fair was located
yes,
in?
Yes, that's my understanding.
So it really wasn't at the scene?
Well, I guess the scene's not wasn't the proper word, but that they searched the surrounding area after he was arrested and they found it there.
Even though there was missing five shells, there would certainly be circumstantial evidence to think that was the gun, but they were unable to establish that it actually was the gun.
Correct, but the ammunition in Fair's pocket matched the brand of ammunition that was found in the gun. So, but yes, I agree. They didn't have actual evidence that that was the gun fired at the officer.
Can you go back to, I'm not sure I completely understand your argument or attempt to distinguish Johnson.
Yes.
I'm troubled by the district court's determination that the evidence was inconclusive and therefore wouldn't have resulted in a different result. And so we're looking at the evidence that would be admissible at a new trial, should it be granted. So how is Johnson not applicable?
Johnson deals solely with what a prosecutor can do. Mm-hmm. It talks about during a case in chief, as evidence of guilt, you cannot introduce inconclusive test results. What happened in Johnson was that the jury was presented with a chart for each piece of evidence, including mm-hmm. the inconclusive pieces mm-hmm. of evidence. And on each of the 15 locations, the expert witness went through which number was found at each.
Right.
And the prosecutor attempted to highlight those numbers that matched the defendant in that case, even though the results were actually inconclusive. The DNA expert couldn't say one way or the other.
So how would the state also be precluded from arguing that on the minor portions that were tested, he couldn't be it was inconclusive? How could they introduce that at a new trial in this case?
Well, the state would have no incentive to introduce the DNA testing evidence regarding the black hooded sweatshirt.
Right, that would
come in. So it would have to come
defense.
In from the defense case in chief. Mm-hmm. The concurrence written by Justice Castle in that case makes it clear that inconclusive results may be relevant in certain situations, that case does not shut the door on that. And I think that that is what's important. The Supreme Court has not spoken on whether cross-examination from the state would be appropriate in that case. And the state believes that if the defense is going to try to enter DNA testing evidence to say that he was excluded completely from the black hooded sweatshirt, that is misleading because we do know there were at least three other profiles, and we're not sure, three or four, depending on how you look at it, and we're not sure who those are. So I think if the defense was to take it there and act that this proves it wasn't him, the state would be allowed to at least introduce the fact that, you know, no results were from the minor contributors. Unless there are any further questions, we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
You have anything further to that? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. Thank you for being here. Counsel is excused. Our next case was